Musings Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. Hello and welcome to the Market Musings Podcast, where today we're going to be talking in the crypto space and the NFT space and all that interesting new stuff that's coming around. And joining us on the podcast is the CEO of Coincilium, Eddie Travier, and the CEO of Endorse, Gurang Torvikar. So hello both, welcome to you. Eddie, let's start with you. How are you, Eddie?
I'm fine, thank you. And you, all good?
Yes, very good. Thank you, Eddie. Thank you very much for coming on. We speak to Malcolm Palais quite a lot of Coincilium, so we know what's going on with the company there. But it's the first time that we have someone on from Endorse. And of course, Gurang, how are you? You're very welcome here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mark. Thanks for having me today.
Yes. And then, of course, last but not least, Mr. Kenny.
Yep. How are we doing? It's good to have you on, guys. And it's quite an international feel to the podcast this morning. I've got myself in Scotland, Mark's in the Netherlands. Eddie, are you in Singapore? Is that correct?
I'm in Asia, yes.
In Asia. And Gurang, I think you're based in the UK somewhere?
Yes, I'm in London right now.
London, all right, excellent. No, it's quite good to actually have four people on the podcast, because usually we only do it with three, but when you add an extra person, then it always makes a much more interesting podcast. And as Mark said in the intro, you know, we're going to be talking about all things NFTs, and in particular Nifty Labs, which is a company that Coincilium and Endorse have recently signed an MOU with. But before we get into NFTs and Nifty Labs, it's what we like to do in this podcast is just get a brief sort of career history of both you guys. You know, it's just a chance to give us listeners maybe 5 minutes, a sort of career bio, if that's okay with you guys. Maybe start with you, Eddie. Just give us a bit about your background and how you get into this particular sector.
Yes, sure. So I'm originally from France, from the south of France. I started my career working for business schools and MBA programs. And throughout that career they sent me at some point in Asia. So I discovered Asia in 1999. And at some point, the business school I was working with was bought out by a larger business school in France. And so I had the opportunity to stay or to move. And I decided I would like to try a new career in a different sector. And I went to work in China, in Shanghai, originally for a private equity firm that was investing in the in China in the booming retail space that was around 2004, and it's an era we call the pre-Beijing Olympics era. It was very busy and a lot of deals, and it was a steep learning curve but very interesting. Mm-hmm. And then after the 2008 financial crisis, I started working on bridging investments between China and other countries, mainly in emerging markets. And in 2012, a friend of mine, who was a French engineer working in the city of Chengdu in China, introduced me to Bitcoin. And quite quickly, I was kind of first intrigued and then fascinated. There were two interesting events around May 2013, one of which was the kind of bail-in in a way in Cyprus, for when the government decided that they were going to take money from bank accounts, especially foreign bank accounts above a certain amount of money, to actually continue and make banks survive in that country. So at that point, people start talking about Bitcoin, saying it cannot be confiscated, and you know that's kind of a interesting protection with these potential issues. And the other point and the other event was the first seed round of Coinbase, or And the first seed round of Coinbase was, I think, around $6 million. And that happened in the spring of 2013. And that was also interesting. Unfortunately, I could not come in. It was already done when I looked at it. And obviously, it was very far from the, you know, the IPO valuation, as you can imagine. But it showed me the potential, and it showed that there were some large, you know, or at least well-known VCs interested in the sector. And then through some meetings in London, mainly, we met with Malcolm Pally, whom you talk to frequently here. Mm-hmm. And we decided to actually create a new company, integrate everything that has been done with Sitcoin, and try to list on a stock exchange. And that happened in December 2015. And the exchange was called at the time ISDX and changed to NEX, and is today Aquis. We have been listed there since the end of 2015, invested in many companies, blockchain companies, and also advised many blockchain companies as well, especially related to ICOs. In 2017, and that's at the time when we invested in Indoors, and Indoors, which of course Gaurang will tell you more about it. But that's when our relationship with Indoors started. Although I knew already one of the co-founders of Indoors as well before, through my experience with Bitcoin mainly.
Yeah, brilliant. Now, obviously, your network. I mean, you've been in the sector almost since the beginning, Eddie, so you must have an extremely sort of large network or black book in your back pocket. You seem to know every day in the industry.
Well, I mean, interestingly enough, you know, when it started, it was quite a small community, and I was spending days talking to as many founders, as many entrepreneurs as I could, a lot on it at the time on Skype, you know, obviously, because I was in China, in Hong Kong, and, they were interesting thing. Something I liked about it, it was a bit reminiscent from the internet years in the late 90s, is that everybody was excited. Everybody was, trying to build this new infrastructure for this new kind of evolution of money. And the main goal was not necessarily to make a lot of money. The main goal was to educate, was to expose people to this new medium of exchange, which became, in the case of Bitcoin, became a major store of value today. And there was really this kind of grassroots kind of evangelist, you know, that I knew from the internet years, that came into this space, and I was very excited about it. So yes, it was a small community. So I, you know, we organized the first conference in Asia for Bitcoin. That was in November 2013, and yes, we had, for example, the main sponsor was a company that became Paxos, which is today one of the major players. They are the partners of PayPal. They have a charter bank license. I mean, they have done very well. So yes, it was definitely a great time to know many of the early pioneers in that space.
Excellent. That's a great summary. So it is. Mark?
Yeah, no, it's a good summary. There's some questions I want to sort of ask you, Eddie. But before we get into that, maybe we should let Gaurang come in and just, again, Gaurang, you kind of give us a similar sort of potted history of your background and career and what led you to Indoors.
Sure, yeah. Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Kenneth. So I'm Gaurang. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Indoors. I've been working in the blockchain space since 2016, and before that, and also when I was working in blockchain, my background is actually a software developer. So I did my engineering studies in India. Then I moved to Singapore, did my master's, and then I got into the blockchain space slowly. So throughout my career, I have worked in various technologies like data science, artificial intelligence, and more recently into blockchain. So I got into the blockchain space because I was enamored by the concept of smart contracts that you could write on Ethereum. So the first time they had an Ethereum meetup in Singapore, I attended the meetup. And I was really fascinated by the possibilities that you could do, the possibilities of smart contracts, the possibilities of Ethereum. And that's when I decided to completely get into the space and have my career in this. Right? So Indoors is actually my second startup in the space. My first startup was Atorus with my co-founder, David Moskowitz, like Eddie mentioned, he knew David Moskowitz earlier. Mm-hmm. So I started writing smart contracts back in 2016, just when Ethereum came out. I was also organizing the Ethereum Singapore meetup. I was helping. I was like a co-organizer of that meetup. And as Eddie was saying, it was a really small community back then, right? So I remember our second or third meetup. We were like six people sitting in a bar on, around a table. That was the meetup back then. And just within 1 year, the meetup had grown to such a big size. There were more than 2,000 people in the meetup. And I remember in 2017, when Vitalik came to Singapore, the meetup was just completely full. You could not get space to stand in that venue. It was just crazy at that time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we have seen the space evolve from, five people sitting on a table to thousands of people, even millions of people in the space right now. It's quite amazing, the journey we've had in the blockchain space. Yeah,
what a change we've seen in the last few years. I mean, and for someone to be there right at the start, back in sort of 2012, 2013, to see where it is now must be quite something to behold. But I wonder if I can just pick up, when you refer to smart contracts, I've heard that a little bit. What does that mean? What is a smart contract? Just quickly, just so we can be clear on that.
So the smart contract is neither smart nor a contract. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a misnomer, I would say. So smart contract is nothing but a piece of code on the blockchain. And you can codify a lot of things in this. It's like a program, software program, but it is run on a blockchain. So now imagine, instead of running this program on servers, on cloud, like AWS or Google Cloud, you're running it on blockchain, which is essentially permissionless in nature, and it is a peer-to-peer network of computers. So a smart contract is run in an autonomous fashion. So no one can actually stop a smart contract. Right? Mm-hmm. So if you are running a program on AWS, for example, mm-hmm. If for some reason your server goes down, your program will stop, or your app will go down, your mm-hmm. website will go down. But in case of smart contract, that cannot happen because the blockchain will never go down.
Okay. And what could be like a real world use for one of these contracts? Could it be for anything really that requires a contract between two parties?
It could be anything. As I said, it's not really a contract. So we tried to do that. Actually, I wrote my prenup on the blockchain. Before I got married, I wrote my prenuptial agreements on the blockchain.
Okay.
It was not a real contract, really. It was just a fun contract we wrote. Just because we were trying out Ethereum at the time.
Okay.
And just wanted to do something fun. But again, the smart contracts haven't found a use case in real-world legal contracts as much as we wanted it to. But smart contracts are used in a lot of other scenarios. For example, we had ICOs early on, which was like a fundraising mm-hmm. platform on the blockchain. Nowadays, you have NFTs, you have DeFi, all these things are complete smart contracts. You have something called a DAO, which is a decentralized autonomous organization. It's like a company on the blockchain. All of these are smart contracts.
Okay.
All right. Perfect. All right. That brings us nicely on to NFTs then. And I think probably for my benefit as well, guys, could you just explain the difference between a fungible token and a non-fungible token? I mean, everybody's heard of NFTs. But I would like to know the difference, because I believe that Bitcoin is a fungible token. So I would like to know the difference. And I'm sure our listeners would as well.
Definitely. So a token essentially is a representation of something, right? So in case of Bitcoin, Bitcoin is a token, Ether is a token, and there are multiple other tokens on the Ethereum blockchain as well. And these tokens are called ERC20 tokens. And each of these tokens are fungible by nature. And when I say fungible, what I mean is one token can be replaced for another token. Or if you call anything fungible, your bank notes are fungible, right? They can be replaced for one to another. So I give you a $100 bill and you give me back a $100 bill. Both of them will have the same value, really. But when it comes to non-fungibility, that means one item of the same class cannot be exchanged for another item for the same class. So let's take an example. You look at paintings by someone like Leonardo da Vinci. Now, one painting of da Vinci cannot be replaced for another painting by Vinci for the same amount, right? Both of them are quite unique in nature. Both of them have their own properties. Both of them have their own value. And you can't really exchange them 1:1.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie, you want to add anything here?
No, I think that's correct. I think NFTs indeed represent any asset that is unique. And, you know, as we're going to discuss, that actually opens the doors to a huge number of opportunities because, you know, as we very well know, there are many, many unique things in the world. So I think we're going to see how, you know, the blockchain space evolves from fungible tokens, which are still today kind of the main, you know, the main type of token out there, the main type of cryptocurrencies, to this kind of new type of tokens, which are not fungible and again, not replaceable one by the other.
Yeah, well, that brings us nicely onto the next point, Eddie. Obviously, at the moment, NFTs, it's all, you know, trading cards and art and, you know, collectibles. But I mean, I imagine there must be real world uses of these NFTs going forward, you know, for all sorts of identification and, you know, things like that. There must be plenty of real world uses.
Yes, I mean, it's quite interesting because we obviously are in this space for many years now, and we always a bit surprised sometimes by the kind of fast at least adoption or at least interest in the mainstream media about certain aspects of blockchain. So obviously, as we mentioned, 2017-18, a lot of people start hearing about cryptocurrencies in the context of this kind of fundraising that we were mentioning, the initial coin offering. And then last year, we started hearing more about what we call DeFi platforms. But still, NFTs were around, and NFTs have been around for a while. But it's really only in the last few months that through some marketplaces, like, for example, the NBA Top Shot Moments marketplace, and through some records of auction houses prize for NFT, like the one by Beeple that is, you know, that has made a lot of noise because it almost reached $70 million. Then NFTs have really come into the forefront as one application of blockchain. And I like to call them, we can call them a bit like a data-rich token in a way, right? Because an NFT is basically a compilation of data, and it's much richer in data than a regular token. It basically takes a bit more space, has a bit more information, and is usually linked to an external file. So, for example, you know, Gaurang will tell you more about that, but there is an external file in your NFT that links you, that shows you, for example, an image in the case of digital art, then it's going to be an image somewhere, or it could be a song or a soundtrack in the case of a music NFT, right? And there are some famous bands that have used it and are looking at using NFTs as a way to sell their songs or to sell kind of memorabilia. So this is kind of the current phase of NFTs, and it has already attracted a lot of media attention. But yes, as you say, we can use NFTs in many, many other contexts. Identity is one of them. I agree. You know, obviously, identity is unique and has to be preserved and has to be secured. So they are ways to look at that on NFTs. Actually, there is a hackathon we co-organized last year with Indoors and there was one project using NFTs on RSK, and they were looking at identity, actually. So yes, identity is one potential application, but I'm very bullish on applications in finance, in insurance, you know, because the wave financial assets have been until now kind of working in tandem with cryptocurrencies has been obviously through these fungible tokens, which were supposed to be all, you know, the same, you know, use. For example, we could consider that a share of Apple is the same as another share of Apple stock, right? But in reality, in the world of finance, there are incredible complex, models, and there are very many different assets out there. There are obligations with many different parameters, such as, you know, expiry date and maturity and coupon rates and so forth. And we all know that, you know, financial instruments can become quite complex very, very quickly. And therefore, for all these financial instruments, NFTs are a much better fit. Now, the reason, I mean, apart from the fact that it's a bit of a newer piece of the puzzle in terms of blockchain, I would say the main reason why NFTs are not yet used too broadly in finance is because they are quite expensive to create, and they are quite they're usually based on one of the blockchains called Ethereum, and that blockchain is actually known these days for, well, first of all, they are very well adopted, but the problem is they're quite expensive to use. Gas fees have been a problem for a long time now.
Yeah.
And when you do use it on NFTs, because it uses many smart contracts or it's a data-rich kind of token, then it's actually still a bit on the expensive side to use in a very broad manner.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I've actually, you know, bought quite a few NFTs in OpenSea, and you know, the gas fees have been dearer than the NFT. You know, it's actually stopped me buying stuff in OpenSea because it was just getting ridiculous. You know, sometimes the gas fees were like $60, $70, $80, $90, which is just very prohibitive. But but on you go, Mark. Sorry.
Yeah, just one thing you said there, Eddie, about NFTs being a data-rich token. So it's more than just a record then, because that's what I thought it was. It was like a record of provenance, of where it's come from, who owns the original kind of thing. But you say actually they can come attached with an image if it's like a digital piece of art or a piece of music. So where is that? Is that must all be stored on the blockchain that then you can call that data when you need it. Is that right?
Not really. I will let Gorang answer because we have been working a lot on this, so he knows a lot on that subject as well. So I'll let Gorang answer that question.
Sure. So let me jump in quickly here. So Mark, yeah, you're right. So see, when you or Mark or Kenneth, when you buy, let me ask you a question. When you buy an NFT on OpenSea, what do you think you're buying?
When I buy an NFT, well, I haven't, but if I were to do that, and I have been looking, as Kenny has done as well, I would consider that I was buying, let's take, for example, a piece of digital art. So I'll be understanding that I would buy the ownership of the original ownership of that piece of digital art, and I will have an NFT to prove that I have that.
Yeah, that is implied, but you're not really buying the art piece, is it? So what you're buying essentially on OpenSea is a token. You're buying the NFT token, and this token is a representation of that digital art.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is when you buy this token, the way NFTs are designed is when you buy that token, this token actually points to the digital art. So the token points to the image of the digital art.
Okay.
And the token also points to some properties associated with this digital art, right? Now you could have a digital art or digital image which might, you know, self-destruct after 3 years, right? And I don't know, you can do any sort of fancy things with this, right? Or you could have an image which changes the color every 2 days.
Okay.
Or you could have a hash mask, for example, where the owner can be changed, the name of the hash mask can be changed, all these things. So these are the properties associated with that image, right? So when you buy a hash mask, for example, you're buying the token which points to the image of the hash mask and the properties of the hash mask. So these properties are something called as metadata.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, every NFT token has two main things associated with it. A media, so the media could be an image, a video, a GIF, or anything else, and metadata associated with this NFT. Now, as you said, you might assume that this media and the metadata is on blockchain. But it's not. In most of the cases, it's not. Ideally, it should be on a blockchain, because when you're buying an NFT, you are buying into the promise of buying something that is completely decentralized and something that is not going to vanish after a few days or a few years, right? So now let's take a case. Let's take an example. You buy a digital image, you buy a digital art, you buy it as an NFT, right? And this NFT token points to the image, the digital art. But now imagine if this link of that image is stored on something like an AWS or a Google Cloud. What happens when the server goes down? What happens when the original person who created this NFT, that company runs out of money, the company goes bankrupt? What happens in that case? In that case, you will be holding an NFT token which points to nothing. Your NFT token is essentially at that point completely worthless or completely empty. So you spend, $10,000 or $100,000 in some cases to buy that image. And now that image does not exist.
Yeah, so I mean, if it's hosted in a cloud server, basically, and the company or the individual doesn't pay their monthly hosting fees, it's gone. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, we'll come on to this in a minute because obviously we're going to talk about Nifty Scanner. But I mean, I have found to my horror in some of the NFTs that I've bought in OpenSea, it's not a pretty picture. But I'm assuming this is the authenticity and the provenance is going to be a big key going forward for people to, for full-scale adoption of these NFTs into industry.
No, exactly. And see, that's the thing. So this is such a hidden technical, property of an NFT. So see, in your case, if you buy an NFT on OpenSea, the provenance will be there, right? So the authentication will be there. So the images will be authentic. The images will have on the provenance, even if it is on a server. But that image can just vanish at any point of time, right? So I can keep everything on a server. I can authenticate that. I can have a really good provenance. But the location of that image also really matters as far as we think at Nifty Labs.
Well, it's interesting because we have seen this before, is that blockchain guarantees provenance up to a certain level, obviously, because the great thing about blockchain is that because it's going to record all the transactions between the minting of the NFT, which by the way is even more expensive than just buying it and transferring it. But from the minting of the NFT to any to the final, let's say, owner in a way, or owner of that token, then on the blockchain you see all these transactions, and that kind of gives you a security of mind on what has happened with this NFT. But of course, like any other information, this is all about data and information. If the original NFT was minted by someone that didn't own the copyright or didn't own the actual art, then in that case, you're basically tracing something that from the beginning was not actually the real thing, right? So there is always a limit to what technology can do. I mean, it's a great tool, and it's a great thing to have this traceability all along the chain. But obviously, you also need, in addition to what Gaurang was mentioning about the problems related to hosting on the server and so forth, OpenSea is an open marketplace, and basically there have been cases of wrongful or deceitful behavior by sellers of digital art which does not belong to them, right? So that's another area that people have to be mindful. So it doesn't solve all the problems, but actually gives you some solutions to make sure that where the where the NFT has been minted and what has happened since it has been minted, basically.
Yeah. Well, that brings us nicely on to Nifty Scanner, which I believe this is an endorse product that was probably released in the last week. I mean, I've actually downloaded it myself, and I've got it as a browser extension on Firefox, and I'll talk about it later. But perhaps, good Gurang, if you could give us an overview of Nifty Scanner, you know, how it works, and you know, what, you know, the uses, because obviously, I mean, it's got a lot of applications going forward, but I'll leave it to you to explain it.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for that. So Nifty Scanner, we developed it. It's a browser extension, and there are two main purposes right now that it serves. The first thing it shows you is something called an on-chain spectrum. So it shows you how where all the images and where all the metadata media of this NFT are stored. Is the smart contract verified? So that's another thing in case of an NFT, is that when you deploy or when you create an NFT, the smart contract ideally needs to be verified on Etherscan. When you verify the smart contract, you can see the code of the contract. You can see, okay, what's happening inside the smart contract, right? But you might be surprised, there's a lot of projects who don't even bother to verify the smart contract itself, which is really worrisome in this case. So you're essentially buying an NFT, but you don't know what's happening in the contract of the NFT. The contract could say that, okay, you buy it today, and tomorrow you don't have ownership of this. It could say that in the contract. You can do anything without if the contract is not verified. So in a Nifty Scanner, we show you all these on-chain details of that NFT. We use publicly available information from the blockchain itself. As you know, most of the things can be found on the blockchain. And second thing is, we also show a decentralization score. So we have an expert team who helped us analyze a lot of NFTs. And based on that, we have come up with a decentralization score for NFTs. I'll give you an example. For example, if you look at AvaStars, AvaStars is one of the very few projects in the NFT space, which has everything on the blockchain. So they're storing the image, they're storing the properties, and they're storing everything on the blockchain. So they have a very high decentralization score. They have 100% score, for example. But if you look at other projects like Hashmasks, they're storing their images on IPFS, which is not, again, as good as storing it directly on the blockchain. But IPFS, I would say, is the next best solution to store your images and your metadata. So IPFS, for example, so Hashmask, for example, will have about 70 or 80% score in that case. So yeah, when we release the extension, we are looking at these two things. We are helping you dig deeper into the NFT that you're buying. So essentially, it's targeted at buyers who want to buy some really expensive NFTs. So when you're buying an NFT, you should at least know what you're buying. You should at least know where the data is stored, and that will give you more confidence that you're buying this NFT. In the future, we are also going to add a couple of more features to this. So another feature we're adding is it will be like we call it Nifty Scanner. So in your wallet, on your page, you will be able to see all the NFTs that you own, which is currently not very easy to do. So if you go to like MetaMask or if you go to any other wallet, you cannot see the NFTs that you own, but we want to do it for you. You just connect your scanner or you connect your wallet to Nifty Scanner, and you'll be able to see all the NFTs directly in the page. We're doing some cool stuff there. And we also want to make it easy for the creators to create the NFTs in the right manner, to give them the best practices, to tell them how to store it on IPFS, how to store it on blockchain, and help make the NFT space better.
I mean, I actually done some research myself, and obviously the NFTs that I bought in OpenSea myself, I mean, there was a mixed bag. There was quite a few that were 80%, but there was a lot at 30%. So I wish this tool had been about a month ago, and I might have saved myself, $1,000 or something. Hmm. But I randomly went on to OpenSea, and I found one of the most expensive NFTs I could find. And this NFT actually came from, they'll remain unnamed, but it was the official outlet for a well-known rock band. And the NFT sold for $100,000. Now, so I ran the Nifty scanner through it, and it came up with a score of 30%. So wow. It's hosted in servers. There's no metadata found, and the smart contract was not verified.
Wow,
So somebody's paid $100,000 for that, and as you say, the image could disappear tomorrow. So, yeah, it's a bit of an eye opener. I was quite shocked that an official retailer of this particular rock band, which appears to be verified in OpenSea, has got all these issues. So, yeah, there's definitely scope for this Nifty scanner to be used across multiple platforms. I mean, I know at the moment it only works in OpenSea.
Yeah.
Are you guys planning to release it in further platforms?
Yeah, that's the plan, definitely. And See, even right now with the NFT space as a whole, although most of the contracts are quite standard, they follow a standard format, Nifty scanner might not work on some of the contracts, which is okay. At least you know that, okay, the contract is verified. You can go to the contract and check it for yourself. But in this case that you mentioned, Kenneth, if it doesn't have the contract verified, that's quite dangerous. I would think twice before spending so much money on that.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously it's a free browser extension at the moment. So how do you guys plan to commercialize it? And where would the endorsed token, perhaps fit into this model?
Yeah, that's the plan. So the features that I mentioned, where you'll be able to see all the NFTs in one place. We also wanted to introduce swapping of NFTs, something like, you know, token swaps and all these things. And that's where the IND tokens will be used potentially. And another instance to use the IND tokens is to help people deploy on something like IPFS. We are working on a bridge between IPFS and all these things. Let's see. We are working on a couple of really cool solutions at the moment.
All right. So really watch this space for the development of this this project, really. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep. All right. So I've not really talked about Nifty Labs. I mean, obviously you guys have worked together for many, many years, and you've recently joined forces to form this company called Nifty Labs, which is based out of Gibraltar. Eddie, can you maybe give us an overview of Nifty Labs and what the plan is for Nifty Labs going forward?
Yes, sure. So we actually started this conversation a while back, and even before we started having a lot of inquiries around NFTs. I mean, it's quite a natural association for us to work with indoors. As I said, we did Malcolm, again, the chairman of Consium, is on the board of indoors. We have been investing with them early on back in 2017, but we also are very familiar with their work, and we did the hackathon last year. It was called the post-COVID hackathon, throughout which, you know, we were looking for developers to work on COVID-related solutions on the blockchain. And basically, when NFTs came up on the radar, and we started to see the market demand for NFT solutions, we realized that, you know, Indoors is definitely the best suited to work with on that. First of all, because they have a very, you know, long experience and great know-how in smart contracts, and they've also worked with a lot of large clients. And also because we have the same kind of philosophy around this. You know, we see the potential and we see the great positive things that can come from it. And again, as we've discussed now in this interview, we can see also the potential drawbacks, the potential risks, you know, and the potential traps that we don't want anyone to fall in. So I think we have the right mindset to tackle this. So Nifty Labs, the idea is to basically enable certain projects, not as many as we are talking to, because we won't have the bandwidth, but, you know, let's say the ones that we feel are the best fit for us,
Help them, you know, deploy smart contracts, help them, you know, mint NFTs and build kind of models around NFTs in different industries. Of course, the first ones we're talking to are the ones we mentioned before, you know, art and music and, you know, entertainment in general. But there are also, you know, other sectors like gaming and so forth that are also coming to contact us. Mm-hmm. The other area is that we are, you know, believers in is the NFTs on Bitcoin, you know, because most of the NFTs, 99%, are on Ethereum or at least on what we call EVM compatible blockchains. And as you may know, or people who have listened to Malcolm before, you know, we have a solid partner with IUV Labs, who manage the RSK platform, and we have invested in them, and they have developed smart contracts using their own blockchain, which is secured by Bitcoin, the Bitcoin blockchain. So in that sense, we want to work on what we call NFTs on Bitcoin, which means using the same blockchain, the RSK smart chain, to the RSK blockchain to actually build NFTs, mint NFTs, build NFTs, and so forth. So that's kind of as well one of the main axes of development of Nifty Labs, in addition to the kind of customized solutions we're going to develop for clients and partners.
Yeah. So is Nifty Labs going to be involved in the marketplace as well? Are you guys going to potentially set up like a marketplace for trade, not for trading, but for exchange of NFTs? Is that something you've considered?
Yeah, we're considering it. I mean, we are not certain of, let's say, who is going to basically operate it, but we're definitely considering building it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm assuming Nifty Scanner would fit into these projects as well as a core sort of offering.
Yes, of course. I mean, you know, the NFT ecosystem is still being built. You know, it's like every. There's one word that has come a lot when DeFi, decentralized finance, got some traction last year, which is composability, meaning basically building tools on top of other tools or on top of existing systems and platforms. And it's going to be the same with NFTs. So basically, you know, Nifty Scanner is compatible with OpenSea, hopefully with more marketplaces. But there are more and more tools like this which are going to be built, so to enable people to easily, you know, find out about what they own or what they own comes from where and so forth. So basically, yes, so the idea is Nifty Scanner is going to be one of these tools, and we want to contribute to the whole, you know, NFT ecosystem. There could mm-hmm. be other tools coming in. And we, you know, with Gorang, we see some challenges and we see some potential problems as we discussed, and obviously every time there is a problem, you know, there is a need to solve it, and there is a need to provide a solution that helps with that.
Yeah, good stuff. Okay. I think one thing that's key as well, which I've sort of picked up on as well, that obviously regulation in this space as well is key going forward. But obviously, you guys are operating out of Gibraltar, which is a regulated environment. So you guys already tick that box, which should be a big plus for potential projects going forward.
Yes, I mean, yeah, regulation has always been an important part of the crypto space since the beginning. Yes, Gibraltar has been very early on, you know, early 2018, working on the DLT license, and they are very, you know, proactive and in principle based regulatory frameworks for blockchain and blockchain projects. So yes, we will look at it. I mean, again, at the beginning, at this current stage, we're really working on the technical aspect and the models, but obviously regulation will be part of the conversation depending on the use cases. In the latest, you know, marketing crypto asset documents that I've seen, which is the EU regulatory framework for crypto, NFTs were a bit aside at the moment, like in terms of it was a bit less regulated than other cryptos, because it's not necessarily as active in terms of right now, you know, financial products than you know, fungible tokens are. But but certainly regulation is going to come up among a lot of conversation with NFTs, because again, we're talking about unique tokens that have reached millions of dollars tag prices. So obviously regulation will have to deal with that. They're not going to let people easily trade $1 million tokens without being with some implication of a regulatory framework.
Yes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And of course, Eddie, Coincilium sort of took their relationship with Indos, announced recently that you're formalizing the sort of agreement, the partnership between the two of you. You have got an agree of revenue, and that, I think, as Malcolm was explaining, was because there are a lot of opportunities. You don't want any kind of paperwork kind of agreements to get in the way of that. So there must be a lot of projects that you can be getting to work on almost immediately.
Yes. I mean, with Gorang, we have already discussed many projects, and some of them are going to be worked on earlier than others. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, we will announce when anything is concrete and has a kind of a direct, we start directly working and it will be available and so forth. But at the moment, yes, we definitely started to consider very specific projects in this space. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I wonder if I can ask perhaps both of you the same question and see what you both say. But you mentioned there, Eddie, about people doing transactions worth millions. There's obviously going to be some regulation. How do you feel when people refer to this NFT and crypto space as being a bubble that is just crazy? Do you feel it's a bubble? Do you feel the bubble is very small or very big? What would be your opinion on that kind of idea?
Well, there are different aspects in a way to a bubble. I mean, there has been a kind of bubble in the sense that there have been maybe NFTs have been talked about anything over the last few months. You know, anything has become almost an NFT focused project. Mm. where maybe they didn't start this way, right? So that's kind of a bubble. In terms of the pricing, obviously it's only a few NFTs have been so expensive. I mean, the majority of NFT prices is obviously sub $1,000 in reality, the majority of the trades are not that high. But I think the main reason why some prices get crazy is because, you know, we're talking about art, we're talking about it's not exactly the same as other sectors where, you know, there is a clear like market price discovery mechanism, right? You know, art has always been a question of taste and a question of interest. So therefore, I think you have to separate the prices of art with the actual NFT sector. So the NFT sector, I mean, if you're buying an NFT for art, I would advise everyone to buy something they like, or they may feel some kind of an attachment to it, or they have some interest, because obviously it's not necessarily an investment product, although some people may look at it that way. But as we discussed before, NFTs is going to be much more than art. Is going to be a solution used in many other sectors, and therefore, in that sense, we cannot if we start looking at real estate, logistics, loyalty points, rewards, as we discussed, identity, provenance. I mean, all these sectors are going to be far from any kind of bubble. They're going to be more on the utility side of the technology, and they're not going to worry about the actual price of the NFT itself.
Okay. And Gurang, how do you feel about the sector and where it is at the moment and where it's potentially going?
Yeah, so people always keep calling these bubbles, right? So-called bubbles.
Yeah.
So we've seen so many bubbles in the Bitcoin and blockchain space until now. I got into Bitcoin and blockchain when it was at the bubble of, you know, $400. Bitcoin was at a $400 bubble. That was a bubble at the time. Then it went to $1,000. Then it came down. You know, like this keeps happening in the blockchain space. So the price, I think, is not a consideration. For me, the bubbles are essentially the hype around a new use case or a new utility for blockchain technology. Right? For example, in 2017, 2018, we had the bubble of ICOs. All these ICOs were happening. There were a lot of scams. But then what came out of that bubble, so-called bubble, was the DeFi space. So DeFi is completely reimagining blockchain and all these applications. So what I would say is a bubble, so-called bubble, starts when people try to juxtapose or people try to imitate non-blockchain applications onto the blockchain. Right? That's when the hype cycle starts. That's when the media gets hyped up about this. They bring the price to a historically high level. And then most of the times it goes down. But what comes out of the bubble is essentially a new use case or a new utility for blockchain.
Okay.
And it's not just about copying the existing non-blockchain stuff onto the blockchain, I think. It's about changing it in a completely different manner. It's about coming up with new ways of solving these things. So I'll give you one example. So in the DeFi space, we have something called as yield farming. We have something called as flash loans, which is a great concept that has been built only on the blockchain. And that's possible only on the blockchain, flash loans. For example, with NFTs, as Eddie was saying, we are going to see a number of new utilities and number of new forms of art coming up. Right? So, for example, I'm personally really bullish on something called as generative art. Mm-hmm. So, when we were talking about having the properties of the NFT on the blockchain and having the image itself on the blockchain, there are really cool use cases coming up where your image can be generated on the fly. So in your NFT, in your blockchain smart contract, what you're storing is a script for that image.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine your image becomes a script, generative script. Mm-hmm. And when you load that in your browser, it is generated on the fly, which is just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the beginning, right? So this generative art concept can be applied to a lot of other use cases. And I think it's going to be mind-boggling what comes up in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Really bullish on.
I think what I could add to that is that usually we know when it's not a bubble anymore when we focus on the actual application and we stop using the term NFT, right? I mean, it's like in crypto, you create entrepreneurs and developers create a lending platform. And yes, it is done through blockchain, and yes, it is done with cryptocurrencies, but actually it does perform, it does feel a need for people, for example, to borrow, to lend, and so forth, and a marketplace maybe. And when it becomes actually just a lending platform, that's when you know it's no longer a bubble. When a marketplace for art becomes just a marketplace for art or for gaming and no longer an NFT marketplace, then we know that it's a bit less in the bubbly stage.
Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. All right. Well, guys, that's almost 55 minutes we've been talking, so it seems like quite a good point just to wrap up before we reach an hour. I'm looking forward to hearing what comes out of the Nifty Labs camp over the next 2 or 3 weeks and months, and I'll be interested to see how Nifty Scanner develops. And like I say, I've got it on my browser at the moment, so yeah, I'm not buying anything else off OpenSea without using Nifty Scanner first. So it's definitely worth it for me. It would have saved me $1,000 if it had been out a few weeks ago. But every day is a school day in the world of blockchain and crypto. So it's a steep learning curve for me. But we're getting there. But as always, it's a pleasure having you guys on, and we hope to have yous back on again in the future, and you can maybe give us an update in the roadmap of indeed Endorse, Coincilium and Nifty Labs. So thanks very much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you both of you. That's really helped, I think, to really put into simple terms what the space is all about. You've really articulated it very well, so thank you. And as Kenny says, yes, it'd be nice to have you on again just to see how things have moved on with both what you know the company is doing, but also the sector as well. But I very much enjoyed that. So thank you both, Eddie and Gurang, for your time today.
Thank you, Bennett. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. Pleasure. Yeah, very happy to speak with you and be happy to speak again, sure, for an update. No problem about that.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Take care.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Tune in next time.